Welcoming a new leader and an update on China's latest moon mission this week on Planetary Radio. Welcome indeed. I'm Matt Kaplan of the Planetary Society with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. We've got a double feature for you, beginning with congratulations for planetary scientist Bethany Ellman of Caltech. She's had quite a week. First, NASA gave Bethany and her team the go-ahead for the Lunar Trailblazer mission, followed by her peers on the Planetary Society Board of Directors, electing her as the organization's sixth president. President Emeritus Jim Bell and Society CEO Bill Nye will join us. Then we'll enjoy the return of Andrew Jones. The timing couldn't be better as China celebrates the success, at least so far, of its Chang'e 5 lunar sample return mission. Congrats are also in order for the Japanese space agency JAXA and its Hayabusa 2 team. After a more than six-year trek, the spacecraft successfully returned material from asteroid Ryugu on Saturday, December 5th. You can discover more about the mission at planetary.org/downlink. The latest edition of our weekly newsletter also covers another SpaceX Dragon capsule's journey to the International Space Station. It's the first flight of a new version of the cargo ship based on the Crew Dragon spacecraft. Don't forget that you can have the downlink delivered free to your inbox each week. Here's some space trivia. Do you know who served as the Planetary Society's first president? It was our co-founder, Carl Sagan, followed by his friend and fellow co-founder, Bruce Murray. Then came former NASA Associate Administrator, Wes Huntress. Next was none other than Neil deGrasse Tyson. And for the last 12 years, we've been ably led and served by Arizona State University professor, planetary scientist, and best-selling author, Jim Bell. Jim and CEO Bill Nye joined me a couple of days ago to welcome and praise Caltech's Bethany Ellman. Our online conversation also gave us the opportunity to ask Bethany about her upcoming robotic mission that will tell us much more about the water on that forbidding globe we call the moon. Bethany, Jim, Bill, welcome all of you to Planetary Radio. Not the first time any of you have been heard on the show, but I don't think we've ever had something like this to talk about before. Bill, there was a board meeting of the Planetary Society last Friday. Tell us what happened, is the significant action at the top of that meeting.
Oh my goodness, we elected a new president. And I know many of our listeners are just so excited. A new president. Yeah, a new president. So it's required by the bylaws. My beloved colleague Jim Bell has been president for 12 years. And now he has handed the reins to Bethany Ellman, planetary scientist, Caltech professor, and now principal investigator on a mission. And I am just delighted because Bethany is going to step into this role and make it her own. As you may know, I served as vice president for a number of years. It's just fun. It's just a cool thing, a wonderful thing to be an officer of the board of directors. Over to you.
Bethany, congratulations on becoming only the sixth president of the society in our 41 years.
Thank you. It's a great legacy, the set of presidents of the society. So it's a honor to be in this slot. And there, I've got some huge shoes to fill. But fortunately, space continues to be exciting here at the beginning of the 21st century. So I'm confident that we've got some great work ahead as a society.
Well, you are in your other life helping to keep it exciting. And we'll talk about that mission in a few minutes that the Bill brought up. But Jim Bell, I want to go to you and what this means to you, handing this off to Bethany.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having us all on the show. And wow, yeah, it was a very exciting day on Friday. And as Bill mentioned, I've been president of the board since 2008. And what an amazing ride. And, you know, we've grown so much and so many things have happened and we've had new people on the board and new initiatives and amazing projects. And it's been spectacular. But if everybody knows that the key to success and sustainability and growth of organizations or countries is changes in leadership. And it was time. It was really time to hand the reins over, as Bill said, to give some responsibility to a new generation and a new amazing colleague, the award-winning Bethany Ellman.
And everybody, just notice, Jim, when you were delivering your remarks in the board meeting, and everybody, it's the coronaverse we're living in.
Yes, yes.
And we were conducting this meeting electronically, virtually. Jim got choked up. He got verklempt.
I got a little verklempt.
It was quite moving.
I did. And it's been just an amazing time working with the society as part of the leadership team. And I'm staying on the board.
You don't get to leave.
The board would still have me. And I love being on the board. I love helping with the strategic direction of the society. And it's just going to be even more fun to be doing that under Bethany's leadership.
Bethany, I think, I'm not sure if it was the last time we saw each other in person, but it was one of the last times at least, was at Arizona State University in a conference room with Jim leading a discussion about Masscam Z, those wonderful stereo cameras, which will be the main eyes of the Perseverance rover, and you were there. And it just makes me think of how the two of you know each other professionally far beyond your relationship within the Planetary Society.
Yeah, that's right. I met Jim when I was still an undergraduate student, and we got connected because we were both working on the Spirit and Opportunity missions. Of course, our roles were rather different, with Jim leading the pan cams, the camera systems of the two rovers, and then I was really fortunate. I was an undergrad tagging along with the deputy principal investigator, Ray Arvidson from Washington University. I got to work out there at JPL at the end of my senior year, work on the rovers, which was the opportunity of a lifetime and really is quite a bit of the reason I'm here. And it was really exciting to work on that team with all these senior scientists and really see how planetary exploration gets done.
And Matt, she really is an amazing planetary scientist. Bethany is involved and so many projects across the solar system, not just Mars, the moon and asteroids, et cetera. As part of the legacy of the leadership of the society is to have a really strong involvement and representation from the professional planetary science community. And Bethany's just, ever since we met, her trajectory has been going up, up, up. And so it's great to be working together with her on Masscam Z. She's part of the camera team for Masscam Z, and it'll be great working together under her leadership on the board.
Bethany, before we go, I promised the audience that we would get to hear a little bit about this other good news you got last week. Tell us about Lunar Trailblazer.
That's right. Last week was a big week. One of the other aspects of my job that's just a ton of fun is the hat I get to play as a planetary scientist who actually leads a planetary science mission. And I'm the principal investigator of the Lunar Trailblazer mission, which is a small satellite ride-along mission that will study the moon's water cycle and figure out where there is water, ice that robotic missions can explore, that astronauts can use, and why the heck there is water on the sunlit side of the moon, which was one of the big surprises of the 2000s when that was measured. So the big news last week was that after a year of hard work on preliminary design, some trials and tribulations that our team worked their way through, some technical challenges, and we made it through, and we were confirmed at NASA headquarters by the Associate Administrator, Thomas Zurbuchen. And so that news came out as well. So with that, it's onward to the moon. And we're in fact today placing some of the orders to purchase some of our components to get building on our instruments and that satellite, for which will be delivered at the end of 2022.
Bethany, I thought you said the water cycle on the moon.
Yeah, that's right.
If I may, what?
Yeah, the moon is wet. Haven't you heard, Bill?
Thank you, Bethany. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Dr. Ellman, Dr. Bell, for your presidential leadership. And thank you, Matt, for having us on the show.
Caltech planetary scientist Bethany Ellman is the new president of the Planetary Society, taking over that position from Jim Bell of Arizona State University. And Bill Nye is chief executive officer of the society. Andrew Jones is standing by with his report on China's mission that is bringing material back from the moon for the first time in nearly 45 years. He'll join me after a break. This is Planetary Radio.
Hi, this is Kate from the Planetary Society. How does space spark your creativity? We want to hear from you. Whether you make cosmic art, take photos through a telescope, write haikus about the planets, or invent space games for your family. Really any creative activity that's space-related. We invite you to share it with us. You can add your work to our collection by emailing it to us at connect@planetary.org. That's connect@planetary.org. Thanks!
Hi, I'm Jason Davis, Editorial Director for the Planetary Society. Did you know there are more than 20 planetary science missions exploring our solar system? That means a lot of news happens in any given week. Here's how to keep up with it all. The Downlink is our new roundup of planetary exploration headlines. It connects you to the details when you want to dive deeper. From Mercury to interstellar space, we'll catch you up on what you might have missed. That's The Downlink, every Friday at planetary.org.
Welcome back to Planetary Radio. Andrew Jones is a freelance journalist and contributing editor for the Planetary Society, who mostly covers China's space program for us. That's a very tall order. He drops by a couple of times each year to bring us up to date. As I speak, China's latest adventure at the moon is still underway, but it has been brilliantly successful so far. I talked with Andrew about much more than the Chang'e 5 sample return effort. Our conversation included a scoop that he'll be writing about soon at planetary.org. It involves plans for a Chinese mission to Jupiter and a possible soft landing on that mighty planet's moon, Callisto. That topic and many others can be heard in the complete interview at planetary.org/radio. Andrew, great pleasure to welcome you back. You are in Finland, of course. That's where you and your family live. And so, of course, you have a sauna. And of course, it is the quietest spot in the house. And that's where you are talking to us from. I hope the heat is not turned on.
No, the heat is not turned on. I'm dressed appropriately. I don't have a beer. And I'm not hitting myself with birch branches. So no worries. But it does give me a bit of peace. So that's good.
Well, let's use that temporary island of peace, because I know you have small children there as well, to talk about all this, beginning, of course, with what is getting the most attention right now. And that has to be this mission, which is just about ready to return to Earth. What's up with Chang'e 5? And I'll note that, you know, we're talking a couple of days before this show is published. So it's up to date as we know it to be right now.
That's right. So this mission is really fast in terms of lunar missions. So we had the launch on November 23 on a Long March 5 from Wenchang, which is China's new coastal spaceport. So that was quite spectacular in itself. The failure of that rocket back in July 2017 meant that we're only now getting around to Chang'e 5. So yeah, 3-year delay, but it's been very much worth the wait.
I'll say.
From there, I mean, we've seen a lot of very stunning footage. So the early part of the mission is about 4.5 days to the moon. So we didn't see anything for these trajectory correction maneuvers or the insertion into lunar orbit. But from there, we've seen kind of almost sci-fi kind of images, which have been fantastic. So we had the separation of the lander from the Chang'e 5 orbiter. And then we had this descent onto the moon, which is really just worth watching quite a few times, actually, because you get to see so many different things going on. You see the spacecraft kind of decelerating a bit as it moves across the Oceanus Procellarum, the target area. You see the spacecraft turn vertical. So you have the landing camera now facing straight down onto the moon. And you see two different phases where the lander adjusts itself to some degree. And as it's going down, you see all these craters, which become bigger and then so big you can't see them anymore. New craters arising. It's almost like a fractal scene going on there. Then you see a final kind of hovering phase where the spacecraft chooses where it's going to land in this hazard avoidance mode, and then finally sets down. And because the moon just all looks the same, you're not actually sure when it's going to land down until you see these kind of blast marks coming out. And finally the soft landing. So I mean, that was quite something.
Absolutely spectacular. You are so right.
So we were kind of hoping to see this live, and there was a stream up from China, but that went dead about 10 or 20 minutes before we were expecting the start of the descent. So disappointment there. But then this footage, well, first the confirmation of success came, and then we got to see footage of the landing. And from there, it's been a bit more open. We had a live streaming of the sampling operations. And this mission is so kind of condensed that they basically have one lunar day to get everything done, even less than that given the sunlight conditions and so on. So they, within a couple of hours, started sampling. We got to see the drill going down into the regolith to collect these pristine samples from below the surface, and then also got to see this robotic arm which they have with a double-ended scoop which would be taking material from the surface. So we got to see those things in action, and it was taking about 50 minutes, I think, the arm to kind of scoop and deliver some material into this canister. And we got to see all of this live, with some commentary and some good explanations of what was going on, which was being kind of translated live by someone from China Central Television. And that was great. The ascent vehicle taking off from on top of the lander is really something to see, as is this ascent vehicle then meeting up with the orbiter. That footage is, again, quite fantastic. And that was the first robotic lunar orbit rendezvous and docking. So that was quite a step. And that was something, both the liftoff from the moon and this docking was something that China hasn't done before. The robotic lunar orbit rendezvous had never been done before by any country. So these were big steps for China in terms of engineering and so on. But also, these have implications for further exploration, both robotically, because they're looking at going to a near-Earth asteroid in the next few years, also potentially a Mars sample return. This kind of mission profile that Chang'e 5 has is similar in a sense to the Apollo missions. So this is also part of taking the first steps towards eventually putting Chinese astronauts on the moon. So this was all really, really big, not just for getting the samples home, but also looking to the future. From here, the samples have been transferred from the ascent vehicle into the re-entry capsule, which was attached to the orbiter. The ascent vehicle's been kind of detached or jettisoned from the orbiter. So that's all still now in lunar orbit. The ascent vehicle still has propellant, so they're looking at an extended mission for this. Mm. And the orbiter is waiting for the optimum window for it to make its trans-Earth injection and come back, because they're looking to make a precise landing in Inner Mongolia, which is where the astronauts in the Shenzhou missions also land. So they have to time that just right to come back at the right time and skip off the atmosphere once and then come down and finally land in Inner Mongolia. So we're waiting for the timing of that. So it's looking like that's going to be late Saturday US time. But, I mean, there's always surprises. So, you know, it might happen earlier, but that's certainly what it's looking like. And that would be the 23-day mission, which they stated at the outset.
What a tremendous success, at least so far, for China. And I love the comparison to Apollo, because basically, I mean, this is the Apollo mission profile. If you substitute robots and a sample of lunar regolith for Armstrong and Aldrin, you're looking at exactly how that took place. And it seems that you are implying, and I've read elsewhere, that China sees this, just as the United States did over 50 years ago, as the way to get people to and from the moon.
Absolutely. China actually, they put out an early mission architecture for getting astronauts to the moon, and they listed some of the spacecraft and the capabilities which they need and which they have already. In May, they launched the Long March 5B, which is designed to launch the modules for their space station, which they'll start doing next year in 2021. But the payload, the test payload they had for this, which in terms of mass was comparable to one of these space station modules, was a prototype for a new spacecraft for deep space exploration, upgraded shielding for radiation, also shielding for a high-speed re-entry coming back from the moon. And this test went really well. So adding life support systems and so on, they might be able to fly this in the next few years. So this test was kind of similar to the Orion EFT-1 flight, which was back in 2014. And I guess the question might be now which one of those ships flies first. It might be Orion, or it might be this new Chinese craft. But yeah, this is another indication, if you like, that China's quite serious about sending astronauts to the moon. And there was also, they're working on a new rocket, which would be specifically for launching this spacecraft, kind of based on the Long March 5, but looking more like a version of the Falcon Heavy. So this is something that they're studying seriously now. So there's all these different aspects. They're putting together all the different pieces. this isn't something which they've officially approved, a crewed project to put astronauts on the moon, but that could come either next year when they release the next new five-year plan, or then in the 5 years after. But we're going to see some updates on this, and this is definitely something that we should be taking seriously. The other thing I should say from Chang'e 5, actually, and I think this is already in the Bruce Murray Library, the panorama. They've released a couple of panoramas, and these are huge images. I mean, and the zoom you can get, you can zoom in on the leg of one of the Chang'e 5 lander legs, and you can see how it's kind of impacted and in granular detail with the regolith. Zoom all around. It's really worth taking a look at.
I did not know that. I mean, I've seen a fair number of the videos of the mission, but here on our in our own library at planetary.org, the Bruce Murray Space Image Library, we'll put up links to a lot of what you're talking about on this week's show page, planetary.org/radio. Andrew, I am so grateful that we have you to look to for all of this, because there is so much going on in China, the Middle Kingdom. I look forward to checking in with you again. I suspect we will once again have much more to talk about, but thank you for all of this.
Thanks for having me.
Andrew Jones is a contributing editor to the Planetary Society. He also writes for space.com and Space News, a couple of other great sources. And as we mentioned, he's a Finland-based freelance journalist who covers the China space program. You can read his tweets at AJ_FI. Time for What's Up on Planetary Radio. Here is the chief scientist of the Planetary Society. It's Bruce Betts, who is ready to tell us about lots of stuff up in the night sky. And I will tell you, because I don't think I have yet, we have not one, but two great prizes for your new contest this week.
That's great.
Can't wait to tell people about them.
Well, you're going to have to, because I have a lot of things to say.
Go for it.
There's just all that good stuff. I mentioned it last week, but here it comes. You got the Geminid meteor shower, best meteor shower of the year, typically with over 100 meteors per hour from a dark site. But it's an almost new moon. So that's peaking on December 13th and 14th that night. Will be good for a couple days before or after, and is a really great opportunity to check out some meteors. But wait, don't order yet. Total solar eclipse visible from Chile and Argentina, portions of them, on December 14th. Partial eclipse visible for much of South America, but not Southern California, just to be clear, Matt. Jupiter and Saturn coming together, the closest they'll be in the sky in the last 400 years-ish, on December 21st. That's low in the west on the 21st of December, but you can watch them getting closer together now and farther apart after the 21st, Jupiter being the really bright one and Saturn being kind of yellowish and still looking like a bright star. Whew. And you still got Mars in the evening sky looking reddish over in the south and Venus in the pre-dawn east. It's a party out there.
I, as it happens, will be in the Southern California mountains on the night of the 13th. What part of the sky, I know you can really look anywhere, right? But what part of the sky is going to be the best direction to look in?
Well, the great news is you can look just about anywhere. Technically, once Gemini, which is the radiant of the meteor shower, comes up in the middle of the evening, you can look 45 degrees away from it and maximize your opportunity. But fundamentally, look for the darkest part of sky you can find. And that's probably your best bet, although you'll be in the mountains. So, you know, look between the trees.
A challenge. Thank you. I accept.
Then we can go on to this week in space history. 1962, the first ever planet flyby was made by Mariner 2 at Venus. 10 years later, 1972, Apollo 17 was on the moon and then became the spacecraft carrying the last humans to walk on the moon, off the moon. This week, 1972. We move on to Random Space Fact. So the names of lunar maria, the dark areas, mostly refer to sea and weather-related features, and some of them refer to states of mind, like mare serenitatis or mare tranquillitatis, tranquility. But then you had Luna 3, when it was the first spacecraft to see the far side of the moon, they found a Mare, and the Soviets wanted to name it Mare Moskoviense, and I'm sure that's poor Latin pronunciation, but basically Moscow Mare. And there was a pushback that it wasn't following the conventions, but then it was accepted by the IAU with the justification that Moscow is a state of mind.
This suggests that Neil Armstrong should have said, "Tranquility Base here, the eagle is mellow."
That was actually his first draft. And NASA said, no. All right, we move on to the trivia contest. We'll come back to Mare. Don't worry, Maria.
In Latin.
But first, let's do some other Latin. I asked you how many of the IAU-defined 88 constellations have domestic dog, so dog in Latin, in their name. How do we do, Matt?
Do you want to give them a shot in the original Latin?
Oh, sure. I'll give I can probably do a great job because my high school taught Latin.
Oh, great.
I did not take it, but they taught it. I was Latin adjacent. So we have Canis Major, Canis Minor, and Canis Venatici. The greater dog or big dog, the lesser dog, and the hunting dogs that hang out in the sky with Bootes constellation is doing some hunting.
Those are, in fact, exactly the responses that we got from our winner this week, first-time winner, Dimitri Bonin in Virginia. He's going to get that copy of The Last American Hero, The Remarkable Life of John Glenn. Congratulations, Dimitri. We're happy to have you on board, and you give hope to other people out there who have been waiting patiently for a big win. We can move right on, and we'll announce those two new prizes.
We're returning to the Maria on the Moon. What are the only two Maria on the Moon named after people? Go to planetary.org/radio contest.
You've got until Wednesday, that's Wednesday, December 16th at 8 a.m. Pacific time. Well, this is not new because we made the announcement last week about the new Planetary Society baseball cap. So we're going to give away another one of those. You can see it at chopshopstore.com. I know a lot of you, maybe most or all of you, heard the Space Policy Edition a few days ago, the December Space Policy Edition. And Casey talked to Teasel Muir Harmony, the curator, one of the curators at the National Air and Space Museum. She's written this terrific book, Operation Moonglow, A Political History of Project Apollo. In particular, they talked about the international ramifications for the United States of the Apollo program, which were largely very positive. It's Operation Moonglow, A Political History of Project Apollo from Basic Books, and the publisher will be happy to send you a copy along with your cap if you win.
All right, everybody, go out there, look up in the night sky, and think about your favorite body of water. Thank you, and good night.
There's a lake in the high country of above Tuolumne Meadows in Yosemite, which is just heaven. And if I could remember the name, I would tell it to you. I remember his name. He's Bruce Betts, the chief scientist of the Planetary Society, who joins us every week here for What's Up. Planetary Radio is produced by the Planetary Society in Pasadena, California, and is made possible by its proud members. Mark Hilverde is our associate producer. Josh Doyle composed our theme, which is arranged and performed by Peter Schlosser. Ad Astra.